Oh, is anyone out there?
Is anyone listening? Do I need to do some sort of trumpet fanfare?
That was very masterful. We've put a lot of work into this.
We've got an exciting announcement to make.
We do. Leigh Sales is engaged to Idris Elba. No, that's not it. Okay, you say. Go on.
It's actually Tim Finn. No, I'm joking. Okay, this is the real exciting announcement. We've written a book.
We have.
We used 2020 to write a book with our friend Miranda Murphy. The three of us have written a book. It's called Well Hello, Meanderings from the World of Chat 10 Looks Straight, because you know how we always say, well, hello. That's why it's called Well Hello. And, I'm actually, I hate to say it myself, but I'm actually quite happy with it. I found it quite funny. I think it's funny.
Well, as you know, I have reservations. I'm like, ugh. This just sounds like the sort of book that, you know,
I'd hate to get for Christmas.
But it actually has turned out rather well. Anyway, I mean, it explores some themes that will be familiar to Chat 10 listeners, but then there's heaps of new stuff as well. Turns out that we've got more to talk about.
I got to write about 6,000 words about music, and I also got to write about 3,000 words about the clock.
Yeah.
So I was pretty happy when we decided we were doing it. I was like, okay, well, here's what I'll be writing, Murph.
And here's the funny thing, though. Like, Leigh Sales from day one of editorial planning is like, okay, I'm doing my top 10 list for this, that, and the other, and I'm just, you know, I'm not like you. I'm not a spreadsheet lady. The task of numbering 1 to 10 my favourite books is like seriously not a pleasurable activity, whereas you're like, oh my God, I've done 8 lists so far and I've never felt more alive. And I'm like, all right, I've agreed to do a couple, but then I'm out after that. But so our different approaches will be evident. But salty tales. Just salty tales, a lot of insults.
And a lot of us talking, sharing our thoughts on, I don't know, all sorts of stuff from how to write, how to read, how to friend people, how to unfriend people.
How to survive on social media.
Yeah, there's tons of interesting stuff, bit of cooking stuff. So it's coming out on the 28th of September, but you can pre-order it now. So there's a few ways you can do that. You can just pre-order it from wherever you like to buy your books, or you can pre-order it from Booktopia, where there is a 10% discount for pre-orders if you use
code
the
word Fairy Wren.
Fairy Wren. And
we'll be signing a bunch of those, I think. We will. So you can have the option of ordering a signed copy, which we will
I've already said I'm only going out there once to sign. So we'll sign as many as we can over one day, and then that'll be that. So yeah, 28th of September, and also we'll be doing, I won't rattle through the dates, but we'll put them up online at some point. We are doing a national book tour, so we'll be coming
NBT.
To various cities, and pending a federal election, which we're sort of slightly worried. What if that happens?
I think we're out of the woods there, mate. Have you noticed the place is on fire? It'll be an election this year.
Who knows? But hopefully the first 2 weeks of October we'll be schlepping around the country, with a suitcase full of books.
Which sales will be carrying.
And the other thing that's great about the book is Gwen has done the design.
Oh, my gosh. It looks
fantastic.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. It's really great. So anyway, I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, I'm super proud of it, actually.
Yeah, I am too. It's good. I was a bit worried. Sorry, you go.
We're both a bit worried.
Top of you like a dude. What?
We're both a bit worried. No, we were. But what I noticed about the process, I reckon it's the first time that I've been involved in writing a book where I haven't cried at some point.
Yeah,
the crying is very central for me with writing, cry writing. But also, and I would actually say that about this podcast too, actually. I think, like, I walked in here this morning so tense and stressed and thinking, I've got to get, you know, this done. I've got to get these podcasts done. Mm-hmm. I've got so many other things to do today. I'm freaking out. And I already feel 100% more relaxed. But it's mainly that. I think.
Isn't it funny? Because it's not like you've got any less work to do. You've got the same amount of work to do.
But
I know, because I often arrive feeling exactly the same. Yeah. And just feeling, God damn, I've got to.
And now I've got to do this. Why are we doing this podcast?
God, why do we agree to this?
And the truth is that I think of it as like, oh, that's more work we've got to do. But actually, in the execution, it's not work. It's just really interesting.
Yeah.
And it produces something, and I think the book has been a bit like that too, partly because Miranda's been very good at organising it and structuring it, but also it just has been less hard because somehow, you know, a group exercise can be can get the same amount of work done but make it feel like less like work.
Do you know what's also funny is when I read the proofs, I don't like to blow smoke up your ass, but sometimes you are so funny. Like there's points where Murph's written down transcripts of conversations we've had. There was one in particular that springs to mind. It's actually a transcript from an old podcast where I read you aloud extracts from my novel Flora's Fancy.
Oh yes, I do recall that.
And some of your interjections are so hilarious when you see them written in paper. I just cannot believe that you came up with them off the top of your head on the go. I was crying with laughter when I read it because I'd forgotten. I just said forgotten.
Well, you were feeding out some pretty rich material, mate. Wasn't that hard?
Well, yeah. The humour's partly in your interjections and it's partly in the just absolute just muck that I'm dishing up. But anyway, it was when I read the proofs, I was cacking myself at certain points.
Well, this book is better than Flora's Fancies, even.
It includes, I believe there's an actual photograph of Flora's Fancy.
Yeah, the visuals are fantastic.
So anyway, so 28th September, that'll be out. So people had asked us a lot over the years, would we do a Chat 10 book? And I've always said no, because I just felt like I wasn't interested in doing it. To me, it felt
too much work.
Too much work, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I just felt like, oh, I'm just not really that interested in doing that. If I had time to write something, it's not what I want to do. But when we sort of were stuck and we weren't going anywhere, we suddenly thought, you know what? Between the three of us, maybe we could do this and it won't be as much work as we think. Actually, do you know what it did make me think? When you do split a book between three people, oh my God, it makes life A, much more fun because you're collaborating with people, and B, you're only doing one third of the actual work.
Yeah,
so.
Although one of us is doing their share of the work straight up and one of us, who shall remain named, is like posting it in on the day before the due date. No detail about who that person might be.
Yes.
No detail.
We'll and Murph to date has also done the huge amount of the heavy lifting, and she'll be sitting back resting on her laurels when we're out having to flog it out of the boots of our car. She'll be sitting on some island somewhere sipping a cocktail.
But also, I mean, how weird that all of this would arise from our rather feckless decision 6 or 7 years ago, however long it was, to just maybe start an experimental podcast.
It's
so funny.
It still boggles my mind what has sort of come up out of nothing. I mean, I think I just actually wrote the acknowledgements, my acknowledgements yesterday. Gentle reminder, you better do yours.
Shit. Okay, I did it right.
And I said something at the end like, I feel like, you know, for the rest of my life, it'll always give me a warm, fuzzy feeling to think about this podcast, you know, even if we stopped doing it tomorrow. And I think, oh,
even after our next year's horrific falling out.
Exactly. Even when I throw a hairdryer at you on the National Book Tour. it really amazes me how just all this massive network of people that have sprung up and who will like each other, and it's amazing.
But aren't podcasts just interesting too? Because when we've had like the existential discussion about what's happening to newspapers and media and blah, 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 you know, over the last, I don't know, decade, how long have we been having that discussion? Seems like forever. I reckon the thing that I didn't see coming was how audio would kind of spring up and occupy a space that is actually different from radio, but also just be so powerful.
I guess we must have, though, seen it on some level, because otherwise why did we start doing the podcast? They must have just been, like, that's a fair while. That was 2014
Yeah,
that
but
we
weren't doing it as a kind of let's take over the media landscape.
No, that's
we
true.
We were just sort of having a bit of fun.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
Like, I do think there is this powerful place that podcasts have that can convey ideas and point you towards things that you'd never thought about and fill you with wonder and curiosity in a way that and you can absorb them in a way that you can't absorb television or books. So the fact that you can listen to a podcast when you go for a run or when you are doing housework or when you're on the bus gives you this, I don't know, it's like an experience that is very intimate.
Well, do you know what it's a little bit like, I reckon? You know, you said it gives you experiences of things you hadn't really thought about. It's like in the olden days when you used to read a newspaper or something and you'd read story because you had to read, you know, flick through from start to finish. Something would catch your eye that you thought you had no interest in and then you've suddenly read a thing about termites or whatever.
Yeah.
And so podcasts can be a bit like that where you're listening to something because, you know, you like the person hosting or whatever and suddenly they're doing an episode about the history of something or other and you're like, oh, wow.
Right.
So it gives you that
sense.
That
is one of the things that's kind of dropped out of the newspaper experience in this sort of new world of bespoke media, or like people who get their news through social media, it means that they only see stuff that they already agree with or that their friends think is good, and they've been hanging out with their friends 24/7, so they don't get new stuff. But I think podcasts are a really great and rich source of new accidental insights. I've been listening to this one actually just on my way here today called Sideways.
Yeah.
And it's a BBC podcast. It's presented by a guy called Matthew Side. Sorry, I've no idea who he is, but a person I trust recommended this podcast to me, and it is...
Is Side spelled S-Y-E-D?
It's S-Y-D-E. No.
S-Y-E-D.
Oh, yes, S-Y-E-D.
I think I might have interviewed him.
So, but it's called Sideways, but it's not, thank God, spelled S-Y-D-E ways. Oh, so, but it's kind of, it's got a little bit of the Malcolm Gladwell's about it, because it's about sociological sociological phenomenons. You know what I mean. And so episode one, for instance, is about the history of Stockholm syndrome. You know how like it's a concept that everybody knows about now, this sort of idea that people who, you know, are taken captive or who are, you know, hostages will in some circumstances start to identify with their captors. And it all goes back to this bank robbery in Sweden where these violent criminals took hostages from the bank staff, and then after a couple of days locked in this vault, the bank staff are like calling the prime minister to like tell him to do what this guy says, partly because they're like, well, this guy's not a bad dude, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so somebody gave it the name Stockholm syndrome, and since then this theory has been sort of developed and developed and developed. But what this podcast does, which blows my mind, is actually talks to one of the women who was the hostage.
Oh.
And apparently like none of these psychologists who have written or like devised the analysis and the concept of Stockholm syndrome ever talked to her. And so she tells her own story about what it was like, A, to be in the middle of this unbelievable situation, and then to find herself as the central character
in this new psychological theory.
Right.
This reminded me of a pod that I think you recommended to me. I forget what the name of the pod is, but it's where they look at commonly held beliefs and they flip it around. And they talked about the Patty Hearst case, and they also talked about Stockholm. Was that you?
Was it You're Wrong About or one of those?
Yeah, things? It's You're Wrong About. That's right. You're Wrong About Stockholm Syndrome, and it picks apart exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I thought you recommended that to me.
No, I don't think I've heard that one. Okay. But then it also goes into how this theory has been extended into domestic violence situations where it's sort of overlaid thinking about the answer to this question you hear asked all the time, well, why didn't you just leave? And he actually talks to Jess Hill a little bit about how misplaced, as an analogy, Stockholm syndrome is domestic violence situation. It was just, anyway, it just made me think in the current environment we're talking about, like sort of men developing theories about women that don't actually have anything to do with the way women think. It was a really interesting episode to listen to. And the second episode of Sideways is about Sally Clark, that mother in the UK whose two children, one after another, died of sudden infant death syndrome. And she was charged with their murder on the evidence of Roy Meadows, who basically said there's one in 73 million chance that this would happen twice to the same person. So, you know, she must be guilty. And she was later released and he was disbarred. Like he had completely kind of messed up his expert evidence. So, and this episode looks at how people rate probability and how they have established ideas of what they think happened, and it completely overshadows their ability to look objectively at things like statistical probability. This is right in your wheelhouse.
It is. I love all this stuff, right? Although it is hard to get your head around. I spent a lot of time researching this for Any Ordinary Day. It's this theory of...
I was a witness to your mathematical calculations.
I just like to apologise yet again to the good people at the Australian Bureau of Statistics for how many times, Michael Wilson in particular, for how many times I had to ring to go, okay, let me read this to you. Is this right? No, but it's the theory of if I said to you, I just threw 10 heads in a row on a coin, so, you know, what do you think my chances are now throwing a head? You're going to go, well, there's no way you can throw 11 heads in a row. But actually the point at which I ping that coin into the air, it's still a 50-50.
Right, yeah.
But it's very – I personally find probability – it feels counterintuitive to me, a lot of things, and so it's sort of tricky. So what that dude's obviously done is just gone, well, your chance of having a sudden infant death syndrome is, you know, 1 in 10 million times by 1 in 10 million again, and got the number.
Which does not.
It doesn't actually work like
73
that.
73 million.
So yeah, it's like causality too. Yeah. It's another thing where people go, this happened, so it caused that. Well, actually, not necessarily.
Right.
But it's human brain always looks for causality.
Exactly. So anyway, it's a really good podcast, but I love the ones that are that give you a chance to learn a story from history, but then derive something from it that possibly wasn't derived properly at the time. Because I think often hindsight is like looking back at history that's had a bit of chance to breathe often gives you like a massively different result.
Totally. Can I tell you about a pod I listened to recently that just made me so happy? It is Rob Lowe's podcast. It's called Literally with Rob Lowe.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he did a podcast.
And it's Rob Lowe interviewing Michael J. Fox.
No.
Yes.
Oh,
now, these two, they're probably my two favourite 1980s stars. They certainly would have been my two major crushes of the 1980s.
Did you have a crush on Alex P. Keaton?
I loved everything Michael J. Fox did, and I remember still my mother taking me to see Back to the Future at the cinema at Greensboro. I was so excited, and I loved Alex P. Keaton in Family Ties. I loved Marty McFly. I just loved Michael J. Fox. And one of the things that makes me feel so warmly towards Michael J. Fox is I think – okay, you were somebody when I was a child that I just absolutely loved and I put on a pedestal and I thought you were fantastic and you have so lived up to it. And I just think
that... Have you ever interviewed him?
No, but I'd love to. But I just think he has turned out to be the most incredible human being under the most trying of circumstances. And he sort of goes into it a bit in this pod where he's really had very poor health from quite a young age, really pretty much off the back of, you know, Back to the Future and all of that. But he's gone on to sort of, you know, do Spin City and have a career and do, you know, The Good Wife, lots of great things. But, oh, my goodness, he's just – it's just been a constant struggle for him.
Oh, I'm so listening to that.
It's great. And Rob Lowe is really funny, and he starts off by saying, you know, Michael J. Fox, I mean, you know, he has done films that just stay with you and they have changed the culture. I am, of course, talking about – Teen Wolf. And then he just constantly rips the absolute piss out of Michael J. Fox about Teen Wolf the entire time. It's absolutely hilarious. So they just have some really great sort of...
Are they friends? I mean,
they are friends, okay. But they apparently hated each other in the 80s because Michael J. Fox wasn't part of the Brat Pack.
Oh, of course not.
And he was a bit insecure about that apparently. And so they sort of didn't like each other and then they became buddies later. But, I mean, there's so many golden moments in it. But one of the best is... where they're talking about how they realised because they're, you know, older dudes whose heyday of their career was now 40 years ago, 35 years ago. When they sit on a film set now, Michael J. Fox said, I realised I sort of get treated in a certain way and I've realised, oh, my God, I'm Jimmy Stewart. I'm like when I was on movie sets in the 80s and people would be like, oh, my God, that's Jimmy Stewart over there in the corner.
Oh, my God. Wow.
It's so – and they both talk about that and how they've realised, oh, yeah, we're that dude now when we show up on film sets. But there's just lots of funny little behind-the-scenes things. The title of the episode's called – Exterior Jungle, I think it's Exterior Jungle Night Rain or something like that. And it stems from Michael J. Fox doing this war film where it was, he said, the most miserable experience of his life, to the degree that if he says, if I ever see a script that has at the opening of a scene, Exterior Jungle Night Rain, it's just like in the bin immediately because it was such a miserable experience. And then they kept talking about the word jungle, like, does anyone do a jungle film these days? It's really funny. Anyway, I highly, highly recommend it. One thing I'd say is, Michael J. Fox's voice is getting compromised by his Parkinson's.
Yep.
But if you just persevere for about 5 minutes, your ear clicks in and then you can understand him really well. It just takes you a second to sort of get what he's the sort of pattern of his speech is.
Oh, okay.
So if you just push through the first 5 minutes, your ear clicks in and then you can follow it, no worries at all.
Oh, that's good advice.
So,
right.
Yeah, but it's just – it's totally – I was just smiling the entire time. It was fantastic.
Okay, right,
yeah.
That's on my list.
For anyone who grew up in the 1980s, just – Stop listening to this right now and just go listen to that immediately.
Wow. Okay. Well done. I also do love a scam podcast.
You love a scam.
I love a scam. I love a bit of true crime, as you know, and yes. I try not to overdose on true crime because it's just can get a bit scary. I've been listening a little bit to a new series called Mapping Evil, which is Tori Shepherd. Journo,
oh, yeah.
Interviewing a guy called Mike King, who's a criminal investigator, and they're looking at the role of geography in crime. So, like, bunches of, you know, the highway murders, like how do highways affect, you know.
I mean, what a great idea.
It's quite niche, but it's
swamps.
How does a swamp work? Anyway, it's so I've just, anyway, that's just a niche, but, you know, up my alley type of thing. But the one that I've been listening to and really loving is a scam one, and it's the Financial Review's podcast called The Sure Thing.
Yeah.
And it's about the two guys, you know, a few years back, two young men who were done for Australia's biggest insider trading scandal.
Yeah.
So one of them worked for this, he was a trader, and his friend from school was working at the Australian Bureau of Statistics. And so the friend, Chris, had access to, you know, all the employment figures and all of those stats, he saw them before they were publicly announced.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because the experts that are interviewed in this podcast say, look, it's sort of an amazingly simple and victimless crime that they came up with. No one to our knowledge has ever done this before. So what they did was the Lucas, who was the trader, said to Chris, who we ran into at some gathering for old school friends, he said, oh, you know, what are you doing now? I'm at the ABS. What do you do? Oh, I'm in the stats. All right. So do you get those kind of all of those jobs figures and stuff before they come out? Yeah, I'm part of that process. And so Lucas, the trader, has said, hey, got a scheme for you. Like, why don't we get a pair of burner phones and you can just text me the details of the about to be announced, you know, jobs figures, because these stats, when they are released to the market, cause a fluctuation in the Australian dollar, right? So if you are if you're currency trading and if you have that information, you know, 20 minutes before anybody else, you can buy and sell currency knowing what the likely fluctuation in the currency will be when the ABS stats come through. Like, it's an amazingly elegant, simple scheme.
Yeah.
But the podcast, interviews Chris, who's a really such a fascinating character because, he's willing to talk about it. He's been to prison and he's out now. But he also talks about how they came up with it, and he's also a completely different character from Lucas. So the original plan that they put together was, okay, we'll keep this small, we'll be super cautious about it. And they calculated, they said they would set up accounts and they would make $200,000 on which they would pay tax.
Yeah.
And then they would dismantle it. And Lucas set up the accounts and set up the trades and it worked like a charm.
Did they get busted?
Well, he didn't tell Chris, but he also opened up some other accounts for himself while I'm here. So Chris ended up making something like $25,000 out of the scheme.
Say nothing.
Lucas made about $7 million. And he bought one of the apartments off the block. He was fast cars, all sorts. And so
he just pulled too much focus because he was making too much money. Right.
Yeah. But the investigation is absolutely fascinating because they interview the cops and the ASIC people.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's really.
Did you say that's Mapping Evil?
No. This is it's called The Sure Thing.
Oh, The Sure Thing.
Yeah,
okay, sorry.
It's put together by the
the AFR.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, sorry.
But the other thing that is really, just as a side note, super interesting about this about this series. And I don't know what to think of this. It's sponsored by a forensic accounting firm, right? So every, like, there's ads through the episodes that are like, hello, got a horrible disgrace that you want to, like, suss out in your company? And so, like, it's the best ad placement ever. This company, I won't name them, the firm, sponsored a really interesting series about white-collar crime.
That's great.
And they're just peppering it with, you know, got any white-collar crime issues? Come to us. So it's, like, it's absolutely brilliant. But also, well, it's a new age of journalism. But I'm absorbing it the second it comes out, every new episode.
Oh, so, great. Okay. Yeah. That, do you know what? I saw a reference to that on the Fin Review yesterday and I just did not catch my interest at all. But now that I've heard you talk about it, it sounds fantastic.
It's awesome because, like, the dynamic between these two guys is really interesting.
Is Chris pissed off at Lucas?
Okay, this is the fascinating thing, because if I were he, I'd be like, wow,
oh,
I'm
thanks,
the patsy,
yes,
taking the professional risk, doing the wrong thing at my work, and we've got this plan, we've got the, you know, the agreed small scale of it, and then to find out that your pal not only went off and harvested all this other money, but also in his decision to do that actually caused the exposure.
Did he go to prison as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
So... but Chris, not resentful. He is such an interesting character because his view of it is, I did the wrong thing and
I got caught,
but I made the decision to do it.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that I got caught mainly because my friend was worse than me is not something that he is thinking or pursuing. It's really fascinating.
I don't know if it's because of any ordinary days in my mind because we're talking about it before, but it's another thing that I researched in that, which is accepting personal responsibility correlates better with recovery than blaming other people in terms of, you know, life, in my book, obviously, life-altering injuries and stuff. But, you know, this is obviously a life-altering experience. But accepting that either it's my responsibility or it was something that couldn't have been avoided correlates with better adaptation and adjustment than it was Annabelle Crabb's fault. You know, if Annabelle Crabb's done this to me,
that it was, I'm guilty.
Yeah, it doesn't correlate with good coping, apparently.
Well, he's a really fascinating character. I'm really interested in his responses. Anyway, great, great series. The other one that I've really got into in the last few weeks is a series called Power, the Maxwells, which is about Robert Maxwell and Ghislaine. Because, you know, I love a media lunatic.
Do you know the thing that
I
most,
love a baron.
The thing that mostly leapt out at me actually with the previous anecdote was that you've listened to so many of these scammy kind of podcasts. It was just how easily the term burner phone slipped out of your mouth.
I know what that is, man.
But you probably know how to get one now too.
No, I've no idea.
Is that a burner phone that's just sitting there?
It's regularly dropped normal one. So, I mean, this is just essentially, you know, the life story of Robert Maxwell, which I'd always sort of been vaguely familiar with, but oh my gosh, just such a fascinatingly weird dude. And of course, you know, he died, disappeared off his yacht, assumed drowned, but certainly one of his many, many children, the infamous Ghislaine Maxwell, thinks that he was murdered. So it sort of, it flows into her and what she was like as a kid and then what happened to her as an adult too. But just Maxwell himself, who grew up, you know, dirt poor in Eastern Europe, and and then he kind of fled Eastern Europe, moved to the UK, did not speak English, and according to various biographical accounts, like, became fluent in English within a matter of months and was multilingual, had this incredible facility for languages. And even, you know, by the time he was a very high-profile media magnate, he had a very plummy sort of British accent, but also was notorious for, you know, just sort of slipshod deals. And Private Eye, the editor, long-term editor of whom, Ian, what's his name, Hislop, who is often on Have I Got News For You, is great. He's interviewed for this series and he remembers all of these battles that Private Eye had with Robert Maxwell. On one occasion, they completely sabotaged Maxwell's newspaper by sending a big box of scotch around to the newsroom so that all the journos got massively drunk because they know journos. And then they walked in to the office and just started holding court in there. I mean, it's like amazing tactics. But also they came up with the nickname for Robert Maxwell, who was famous for not paying people and was born in Czechoslovakia. They called him the bouncing Czech. wouldn't you be happy if you came up with that nickname? I mean, you'd retire happy if you came up with the bouncing check.
Oh, that's
just so good.
Oh man, yeah, that is very impressive.
So podcasts,
yeah, podcasts. I know I mention this podcast just about every time, but can I just give one mention of Strong Songs? Yeah, you knew it. Just that they've got an episode, a Bowie episode, and it's Kirk's done Starman and what's Ground Control? What's the song called? Ground Control to Major Tom. Space Oddity. Sorry, I was trying to think what the title of it is. Space Oddity and Starman. He does two Bowie songs in the run episode. And it's just,
okay, that's pleasurable.
I don't need to tell you any more about Kirk and how wonderful he is, but I was at a party on Saturday night and this bloke came up to me and, I've just got to thank you for Strong Songs. I was like, you are welcome, sir.
Floral tributes to the stage door. All right, looks like we've got to run, right?
A lot to do, yeah, so we better get out of here.
All right. But anyway, book, well done.
Yes.
That's what we started this.
28th September.
Seriously, I mean, it actually is quite good. I mean,
it is.
Oh, I'm as surprised as anyone.
I know that we would say that, but, you know, also really, we would probably say if it was crap. So it's not. It's good. It's funny. The end.